Hello again, and welcome to yet another episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. This is the podcast that goes hand in hand with our two quarterly lifestyle magazines, InNoosa Magazine and Hello Sunshine Magazine. A reminder that our autumn issues of both of those titles are available now on the streets of the Sunshine Coast. And if you'd like your brand or business to be part of our winter issues, reach out to our team. You'll find us on Facebook and on Instagram. Okay, on with today's episode. In a world obsessed with electric cars, one car maker is taking a different road. Toyota, the brand synonymous with reliability, is skeptical towards EVs, but is their caution justified? Join us on this episode of our podcast as we speak with Brett Mills from Ken Mills Toyota, a longtime dealer principal. We'll dive deep into the iconic brand's future. We'll explore Toyota's multi-pronged approach to clean cars, from hybrids to hydrogen, and discover why they believe it's the key to winning the race for sustainable transportation. Is electric the only path, or is there a more diverse future for motor vehicles? Buckle up for a fascinating conversation about trust, tradition, and the road ahead. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Brett Mills.
My first car was a Toyota Corona Mark II.
Nice.
I don't know if you remember
those. My granddad had one of them.
Six-cylinder engine, four-speed gearbox.
Four-speed, yep.
It always felt like it needed a fifth.
Yeah.
And today I've got a Camry hybrid. Mm-hmm. That's 12 years old with about 300,000 Ks on it. So as a Toyota dealer, and I had someone come out and look at the car the other day, I just had to change a battery. Mm. The engine, they said, you'll get half a mil out of this car.
Yeah.
How do you, as a dealer, they're so reliable.
Mm.
You must hear this story all the time.
Yeah, I think it's nice in a community like this to sell a brand that you know when the person takes delivery of it and you shake their hand, you're probably not going to see them again until they're coming in for a service or they want to trade it in again. So, of course, we have a few issues with product, but they're generally pretty good, and so from a reputation point of view, that kind of is important for us, that the brand we sell is a quality product.
Give us some background into the dealership itself. Ken Mills, when did your dad start that?
So Dad used to, many years ago, run the Toyota dealership in Gympie, and then we bought the dealership in Kingaroy in 1993. So that was our first kind of business venture as a family. And so that, chugged away for a long time. Around that stage, I'd sort of gone, my sister and I were at university. I then went back to Gympie, this is where we grew up, and I worked as an accountant for a while and I continued to study, and then I ended up in the Kingaroy dealership in 1996 and I worked there through till 2000.
Was it inevitable that you were always going to end up in the family business?
It wasn't really planned, to be honest, but I think I've always had a real inkling for business, and when my family started business I was really excited about it and I kind of wanted to get involved. And I had, I was studying business and I'd worked as an accountant. So I kind of had a natural bent to want to sort of get into business.
Crunch numbers.
Yeah.
I want to kind of focus on Toyota as a brand and its place in the environment, the motoring landscape. And I'm really interested in this as a subject.
Mm.
I think it was a couple of months ago, just correct me if I'm wrong, the Toyota CEO said it was wrong for manufacturers to put all their eggs into the EV basket.
Mm.
And if you look at Toyota, the first to come out with hybrids, I think, with the Prius, and then I've got a hybrid that I've had for 12 years, got 280,000 Ks on it. And then the other car was the I think came out a year or two ago. I love the design of this car. It was the hydrogen. I want to get the pronunciation right. Is it the
Mirai? Yeah.
And now, of course, we'll get onto the BZ4X.
Mm.
But what's what's the future landscape like for Toyota as a brand in terms of this? Where, do you have a clear direction in terms of what's going to develop as the car for consumers?
I think Toyota's got a clear strategy about how they believe automotive should look. I think the very complicated part about this for us to get our heads around is that the transitional phase that we're in at the moment, because of largely the need to reduce emissions, is bringing out new bits of technology. And I think we kind of forget that automobiles are significant pieces of technology, and the evolution to the point of sort of settlement is going to take a long time. And the way it happens in different countries is influenced by policy setters in those particular countries, the appetite that the country has for change, how wealthy the country is, what natural resources are in that country, how big the country is, the market preferences of that particular country. So, you know, we're really starting to get engrossed in this in Australia now. But Toyota, you know, and other global car builders have kind of seen the evolution. We're kind of a little bit behind in terms of our evolutionary stage compared to other countries around the world. Your question about, you know, the question is really, if you want to pin it down, is one technology the solution for both the reduction in carbon and actually solving all the needs of consumers? And my belief and Toyota's belief is no, it's not. There's not one simple technology solution that can suitably provide consumers with all their mobility needs and also, you know, reduce the carbon footprint. So Toyota's, I guess, probably been a little bit accused of almost being a bit anti-battery electric cars or pure electric, and they're not. They see it as part of their makeup of product in the future. But they have what we call a multi-path strategy around vehicle propulsion in the future, and it includes various forms of technology, electric cars, hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, hybrid, plug-in hybrids, biofuels. All of those things they believe are solutions. And one of the things that's really important about the way they think about it is they have a guy called Dr. Gil Pratt, who's he's actually a rocket scientist. He runs their R&D area in Japan. Oh, it's a global organization. But they have a saying, which is you shouldn't let perfect be the enemy of good. And kind of what it means when they refer to it in terms of this, you know, evolutionary phase we're in around propulsion systems is the battery electric vehicle in some instances is being held up as the perfect solution. And so the problem with that is that it's almost like you then actually slow, well, what can we do today? So hybrid vehicles, for example, are an excellent solution for today. And they dramatically reduce the carbon tailpipe emissions compared to their petrol counterparts.
Yeah.
And you can mass produce, and they're accepted by the mass market. So Toyota has a pathway which leads to lowering emissions as we go along through new technologies like hybrid, plug-in hybrid, biofuels, hydrogen. But even just the development of new, you know, we've got new diesel engines which are far more efficient than their counterparts. You know, we've had our famous 70 series, which has been famously powered by a V8 diesel. That engine can still be bought today, but it's also now produced with a four-cylinder, which has, for all intents and purposes, means that the car solves the same problems for the consumers, but it's far more efficient, produces less emissions. So there's this kind of thing that Toyota's talking about where the world's in this almost wait and see phase. Wait until we have battery electric cars for this, for that, and all the solutions. But that, frankly, in terms of mass market, is still some way away because of all the barriers around producing electric cars, the need for precious metals, the infrastructure required in a country like Australia is substantial to be able to run, you know, BEVs around the whole country. So certainly that multi-path strategy, that phase-in approach is Toyota's belief.
It's like a multi-pronged approach. I get that that's Toyota's position. But when you talk to consumers, what are they telling you? Because if you're a consumer in this country, and geographically we're so spread out, and you're talking about infrastructure and charges, and I think there's only one hydrogen recharging spot in Australia, which is in the ACT. But Brett, when you talk to consumers, what are you hearing from them? What do they say to you?
It's a real interesting space at the moment because it's almost like it reminds me of the old VHS and Betamax days, right? Where it's like if you owned a Betamax, you believed that they were the solution for everything. I think there's a whole bunch of people who probably are realists and go, you know, it's a little bit difficult to see how battery electric cars can be used in all the ways that Australian consumers want to use those cars in their current form of that technology. You know, like people who tow caravans around Australia, people who, you know, like you can buy a battery, you'll be able to buy a battery electric Hilux in the not too distant future, but its range is like 300 kilometres and then put a load on it and it's less than that. So it's just not practical in all senses, right? So I believe there's a fairly large body of people who go, you know what, we're on board with the idea of lowering emissions, but we need car builders to provide us with solutions that don't compromise our kind of what we're used to from a car, you know? Like, I don't want to spend a heap of money on a car and have to compromise my position as a consumer. So I do think there's certainly early adopters uptaking BEVs, no question about that, and that's been the pattern around the world. That was the pattern. I was working at Toyota Australia when we bought the Prius in. That was the pattern with that technology. The early adopters came at the car pretty hard. But moving from a early adopter driven market to mass market is substantially different. You know, and we know from our hybrid experience with Prius that until we can get reasonable price parity, until we can overcome some of the negative consumer experiences with some of the other technologies, mass market is, you know, probably difficult.
To counter that, what's the most common comment you hear from an EV owner? Like, what are they loving about EVs today?
So I think the cars themselves are really cool, no question, and super powerful, great to drive. Obviously, they're quiet. So there's no, you know, and I don't always worry when I talk about this that people think, well, I'm anti or negative or Toyota's negative on EVs. We're not. So the cars themselves, there's really no problem with. They drive fine, quiet, as I said, all the rest of it, plenty of power. What we're seeing around the world is that resale values are quite low, and there's a second owner issue with EVs that is only just really coming to light now, because if you think about, you know, in numbers, the first ownership cycle for a lot of EV owners now is slowly around the world coming to an end. There's some hesitant, particularly in Australia, where you've got quite strict consumer legislation for dealers, for example, to trade and pay good money for secondhand electric vehicles, because there's concern about, is the battery going to last? Because batteries are still really expensive. Again, it's just that simple mass market number, like there's just not enough numbers to keep the cost down. So there's a hesitant for dealers like us. In my dealership, we won't trade an electric car or buy an electric car. Now, we absolutely will for Toyotas. I can tell you about that in a moment. But it is a bit of a concern for us that, like, as a business in the business of selling cars, if we sell a secondhand EV, Australian consumer legislation makes us responsible for that car for some time. And so if you have a battery fail in one of the vehicles, you know, it's not our brand, for example, you're talking huge money, right? So these are the things that require an ironing out, I guess, to enable a mass market for this type of technology. And it will happen. Like, it's just the steps that have to go through for this type of product, you know, for people to really feel comfortable with it. Toyota's product offering in EVs, which has just come to market, that car, look, obviously Toyota's a significant brand in Australia, and so that car can be purchased on a full service lease for consumers. And what that means is that there's a guaranteed value of the car. So it kind of protects the consumer you know, as we go through this period with EVs where, you know, the market is not kind of sure, it means that the consumer knows what the value of their car is going to be when they choose to, you know, either sell it or trade it or whatever it is that they want to do. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get on to the BZ4X. So now this is the first fully electric offering.
RAV4 sized SUV, available in a two-wheel drive and an all-wheel drive version. I don't have stats in terms of numbers. I'm not good at that these days. But let me tell you, get in it, put your foot down, the thing flies.
All EVs do.
They do. They have so much power off the mark. So they're cool to drive, right? They're a fun product. So I kind of get that part of it. So it'll do about 450 to 500 Ks on a charge.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, this is the thing with EVs. You turn the air conditioning on, it bites a little bit. You load it up, it bites a little bit. More so than what we're used to with petrol cars, right? Or a combustion engine. There's not really an entry-level product there, a fairly high-spec vehicle. $66,000 plus on roads is the price for the car. And there's another higher version, which I think starts at about in the mid-70s somewhere. So I'm actually going to drive one, right? I'm actually going to take one as a demo because I kind of feel like I've got to get myself immersed in what it's actually like to own an electric vehicle and to drive one. And then, you know, I want to understand what it's like from the consumer's perspective. To be an EV owner, so I'm actually jumping into mine this week.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's a lifestyle thing, owning an EV. When you have your own standalone home, I mean, it's about what do you need? You need a special charger, you need certain, is it ohms? Like, I'm not an electrician. In terms of the charging point, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, when Toyota, you know, when we knew this EV was coming to Australia, a few of us got involved and we did some work around trying to understand what it means to Australia in Toyota to have this car to sell. And we were able to actually go into a lot of the consumer feedback from other markets. So we did an information share with Toyota Europe, and they gave us, you know, what are the pain points that, you know, in the post-purchase phase that their consumers had with EVs, because BZ had been sold over there for quite a couple of years before. Okay. Yeah. And I guess what came out of that was that people want to use an EV like a lot of people use a mobile phone. They want to basically use it all day and then come home, plug it in, and then wake up in the morning, it's fully charged and it's good to go again. So there's a bit of a funny then around public charging, where I believe that, you know, a lot of people who perhaps have a workplace with dedicated car park and charger might be happy to charge in that manner. But those who don't, the research at the moment or the feedback is, I want to be able to charge in my at home at night. Drive it all day, drive home, plug it in, wake up in the morning, it's good to go for the day.
And what I've heard from owners, if they have solar, there's that beautiful, I'm generating my own power, I'm powering the car with the power that I generated, and it's kind of that full circle.
Yeah.
But not everybody's in that kind of scenario.
Yeah. So to go on with that, when we drilled into that information, there was all sorts of stories about people who'd bought EVs there, like in London, and, you know, there's power cords running out from apartment blocks across the footpath because they didn't have car park in their apartment block. So some people had kind of rushed at the purchase, sometimes as early adopters do, without kind of fully thinking through all of those consequences. So BZ, the way the charging works is, you know, you have a certain size battery, and built into the car, any sort of electric car, is a device which is like what's on a phone charger. When you plug it into the wall, the big white clunk, that determines the rate in which the car charges at. So the car controls the rate that it can charge at, and that's based on the battery, the way the battery's cooled, because it in some instances stops the battery from getting too hot. So BZ is supplied with a very basic charger. If you just use that to charge it, it's about an 8-hour charge if the battery's flat. It's an AC, but you can upgrade and get, and actually on the FSL there's a package where you get a different type of charger. I can't be quoted exactly what the charge time is, but it's significantly less. You know, and then there's DC charges. So a lot of the public car charging is DC, and the car would probably charge about half an hour or so. So it, you know, depends on the charger a lot as to how long it takes to charge, but the car will actually also control how quickly it can charge in order to make sure that the battery, frankly, doesn't overheat. And that depends. So as they, again, this is where the technology will keep moving. So, you know, Australia waited with BZ to get the latest version of the car. So it has a slightly better battery than the previous version. It charges slightly more quickly. It's got different cooling. And so that pattern will continue, right, as this technology keeps developing.
Let's talk about hydrogen and the inroads that Toyota's made. Can you pronounce the, I did write it down phonetically before, the Mirai?
Mirai.
I got it.
Yeah. So Mirai. So the car we've got in Australia is actually the second generation of that vehicle.
Uh-huh.
So it's been around for quite a bit longer than just the last 12 months. But the second generation was developed, and Toyota Australia has bought some of those cars to Australians, partnered with some companies to basically put it in the field. So there is a couple of different ways that hydrogen is used in terms of making cars move. Hydrogen fuel cell, if you think about it simply, is effectively an electric vehicle that has a fuel cell on board, which produces the electricity. It's like having an onboard generator. In simple terms, what happens is hydrogen comes in, and I say there's some sort of splitting of the atom that happens.
Let's leave it at that.
Let's leave it at that.
Yeah.
And what you get is electricity,
mm-hmm.
and you get water. They are the outputs. And so if you say to yourself, okay, well, what's the benefit of that? Well, the real benefit is that that car requires a significantly smaller battery than if that car was powered purely on battery power. And so that type of technology is leaning towards being quite useful in heavier use type vehicles, buses,
trucks. Yeah, right.
That type of
thing. So there is a place for the development.
Absolutely.
I can understand that.
I've been hinted that there is something happening in Australia where if you imagine the front of a prime mover where the engine sits, if that literally could be a fuel cell and used to power a truck. There is, we've seen this, is not secretive, there's large, well, no, they're not so much large, but there's large output hydrogen generators, which Toyota will actually start to assemble and actually sell in Australia. The type of size, just to give you an idea, would be if you could imagine a generator that would probably fit in the back of a Land Cruiser Ute, but only just fit,
mm-hmm.
about that size. But in America, they use them to power festivals and, you know, sporting sites, outdoor broadcasts, like big stuff. They can power about 15 electric car chargers at one time. So hydrogen is becoming a, you know, it's a alternative to be able to actually generate electricity.
Mm.
Toyota also is using, has done a hydrogen combustion engine. So,
and that's the difference between, yeah, there's a hydrogen combustion engine and then there's the hydrogen that charges the battery.
Correct. So what, and they are quite different, right?
Yes.
They're very different. Yeah.
I know, but it takes just a minute to go, okay, well, there's two kinds of hydrogen cars.
Yeah.
But so tell us about the hydrogen powered engine.
Well, just it's an internal combustion engine. Instead of having petrol or diesel in it, it's got hydrogen.
It's hydrogen.
Yeah, it works exactly the same way.
Yeah. When you talk about trucks and heavy machinery and ships and planes and things like that, they all can't run on electricity.
Mm.
So can I also ask you, is there any inroads into synthetic fuels in the development of engines that run on synthetic fuels?
I'm probably going to say I don't know a real lot about that space, although I do know that there's work being done on it. And certainly biofuels is another area where there's work being done. I don't know a real lot about it. You know, I think those things all have their place.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, one of the things for Australia has been, you know, waiting for legislation to come in around vehicle emissions, you know, where the manufacturers, you know, big global manufacturer like Toyota, they've been working on, like Mirai, for example. Like, I was working in my parents' dealership 25 years ago, and we got a fax because that's how you got things in. We got a facsimile from Toyota, and it said, oh, we're going to launch this Toyota Prius, and explained it. And they said, our vision is one day to build a car that emits nothing but water from the tailpipe. Well, they've done that now. Because I remember reading it going, what? You can't do that. So, you know, I think the lead times on this stuff are long. But it does require, I think, you know, governments around the world to sort of help things along with, you know, legislation helps mould consumer behaviour. So the uptake, you know, the uptake is a bit of an issue, I think, for EVs globally, that as much as it's growing and you keep hearing about massive growth in EVs, they're still relatively small numbers is the truth. You know, and different companies have tried to enter the EV market, like Dyson had a crack at building electric cars because they go, oh, we've got electric motors in washing machines or vacuums or whatever it is. I see Apple has just abandoned their car building project. So the point is that it's difficult for, you've sort of got to have almost like an active automotive business where you can then add the technology as you go along. You know, Tesla's been a bit of an exception to that, but I don't know this for sure, but I understand, you know, for many years Tesla wasn't profitable. They are now, I believe.
Well, as far as you're aware, will they delve into different areas of like hydrogen, or will they just always just make electric vehicles?
Yeah, okay, I really don't know. You know, I think there's definitely, and this is happening in Australia, where there's groups who are advocating just for electric cars.
Yeah.
You know, I really think the reality is, though, if you look at the way we use cars in Australia, it's hard to see how, you know, an electric car can be the right option for every scenario.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Toyota's saying. Like,
yeah,
there's got to be a mix.
The brand, though, Toyota, must be ingrained in Aussie culture in terms of the car-buying public and consumers because of it. I know you said 25 years ago for the first Prius, the hybrid?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it was released.
The first ever hybrid, right?
Yeah, so it was probably... It was 2001, so yeah. It's not quite 25 years ago.
So there must be a relationship between Aussie consumers and that brand, and Toyota as a brand, to go, well, if we're going to trust anybody to give us an alternative in terms of a vehicle, then Toyota's...
Really... Yeah, and we're hoping... I mean, I think with BZ, there's a pocket of... I wouldn't say they're early adopters, but they're maybe the next consumer along who are kind of waiting for a brand like Toyota to release
to
a
car. To come up with an EV.
Yeah, just to sort of probably give them a little bit more confidence. And as I said, just a little, the way we can take it to market with a full service lease where it de-risks the resale value, I think will help as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does your, I want to ask you about, you're the chairman of the Toyota National Dealer Council.
Mm.
What does that mean?
So we've got, and for as long as I can remember, the Toyota dealers have been represented by an independent body, which is the National Toyota Dealer Association. And that association works quite closely with Toyota at a senior level, Toyota Australia. You know, various committees. We work together on... how to improve the customer experience, how to enhance the brand. We represent the dealers when, you know, we have to sometimes have complex conversations with the manufacturer about policy and rules and those types of things. But certainly the relationship that the National Toyota Dealer Association has with Toyota Australia is envied in the industry. You know, in the last few years since I've been the chairman, we've gone through some pretty complicated new developments around the franchising code. You know, we supported and worked our way together through COVID. Trying to make sure that dealers were okay on the way through. You know, there's been issues around supply. You know, we work our way through all of those problems. We don't always have the answers, but the fact that we're able to sort of communicate pretty openly means we generally get a better outcome for everyone.
Okay. Yeah. So like a liaison role in terms of representing the dealers?
It's effectively advisory
in
its capacity. We have some shared resourcing that we develop solutions together. So there's some joint funding type arrangements. So we've got some tighter rules around those types of things, but pretty much it's an advisory capacity. Yeah.
Can I ask you how running a dealership has changed from the 90s when your dad started a deal to today. And I mean, you touched on a couple of issues. The one thing I notice when I drive past a car dealership is lack of stock, I suppose. But how has that, and the other, like, people are ordering cars off online these days. I mean, how has that as a business model changed? Mm. And how are you guys adapting?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, you know, I think the learning journey never finishes, right? And I think, so I've been a dealer for just over 20 years now. And I can see how you must evolve and people must change in order to, you know, position yourself well for what does the business mean for, like, the next 20 years. You know, in my dad's day as a Toyota dealer, it was all about grow the market share because, you know, Australia was a relatively immature market. There wasn't really, outside of Commodore and Falcon, they had a real foothold on the market. But
you were building Toyotas here, weren't you?
Yeah, we were building Toyotas. Yeah. There was plenty of cars getting built here. But the market was relatively undeveloped and the offerings were pretty narrow. So I guess if you're a company like Toyota, you probably looked at it and went, oh, we can broaden the model offering and, you know, grow market share. But it was kind of aggressive market share strategies, right? Which people like my dad and the dealers of his era, they had fun, right? There was always incentives on and let's get going. Let's just, you know, sell plenty of cars. You know, it's still like that. But now we're in a phase where, you know, the market is mature. It's, the market in Australia is 1.1, 1.2 million new cars a year. And I don't believe anyone really thinks it's going to grow quickly from there. You know, so for us now, you know, there's rationalization happening. We've got to be much more efficient in the way that we operate. You know, many years ago, most dealer principals were sales managers who were, you know, clever. Mm. Now you've got accountants, economists, lawyers, those types of people running our businesses. Like, there's a lot of staff, there's lots of processes and systems, and you know, there's a lot of risk in our business. And
we touched on the reliability of a brand like Toyota at the top, but there's lots of Japanese models that are just bulletproof. Intel, I won't mention any European name. My background's Italian, but I don't think I'd ever buy a European car because I've heard too many stories. Why are the Japanese so good at building, and not just Toyota, but why are they so good at building cars that just go? What's the secret?
Yeah, look, I think I can't really speak for other Japanese car manufacturers other than Toyota, right?
But they have a good reputation.
Yeah. I have a huge belief and I'm a massive fan of the Toyota production system.
Right.
Which is the approach to the way that Toyota not only manufacture cars, but it encompasses the philosophical approach that the company has to pretty much everything that it does. So the simple, you know, Kaizen, ongoing improvement, you know, customers are everything, the customer's at the center of everything, your people are your most valuable resource, and the mechanisms when you drill into the Toyota production system, which were very different to Western manufacturing when it started. And, you know, a lot of the efficiency type programs that are run around the world now are all born out of the Toyota production system. So things like being able to pull the end on cord and stop the production line, you know.
Yeah, now see, I don't know if I dreamt there or someone told me that, but is that true? Anyone on the production line, 100%. If there's a fault they can actually halt the production? And that's a Toyota?
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's all Toyota production system. And, you know, there's so much to the Toyota production system that, you know, you can, you know, you could learn and study it forever, but it's just such a great way to craft your thinking around how things should be done, where really what you're doing is you're taking up feedback from people who are working for you. You know, you're not trying to overburden people. You're trying to eliminate waste, but you're not trying to do that at the expense of anyone who's important in the process. And I'm a big fan. I just took 11 of my staff down to Melbourne and we did a bit of a training course and a simulation around Toyota production system. I've got people going to work with the team at Toyota in Melbourne this year on a 3-month secondment to try and help us understand and bring that approach into our company.
There you go. Brett Mills was our special guest on today's episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story. And if you enjoyed that conversation and you think there's something in there that your friends or family members might enjoy, please feel free to share the episode about. You can share the link about with a text or on your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.